two items on our agenda before us, and we have several experts and guests in attendance. Madam Clerk, would you read the first item?
From Corporation Counsel, requesting authorization to amend Section 201.24, subs 3.3, 3.5, and 3.11 of the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances as it pertains to pension benefits in preparation for implementation of possible state-mandated employee pension contributions. Referred to the Committees on Finance and Audit and Personnel and the Pension Board. Finance and Audit approved the substitute resolution by a vote of 6-0. Personnel concurred with Finance and Audit and approved the substitute resolution by a vote of 6-0. And you all have in front of you the Pension Board's comments regarding this item.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, please come forward, introduce yourself for those in attendance and listening in to our proceedings.
Hi, I'm Larry Langer from Buck Consultants.
And Mark Grady from Corporation Counsel.
Thank you, gentlemen. If you can take the time to summarize what's the matter before us, and then we can turn to the actuary for a little bit deeper review.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is before us is implementation of state law. As you know, the state legislature and the governor have required Milwaukee County to begin pension contributions that are different than the ones that the Milwaukee County had begun on its own. These contributions are mandated at one half of the actuarially required contribution for the pension system. The reason you have a substitute before you today, well, the reason for the original resolution is so that we could do them as pickup contributions and make them pre-tax contributions, also obviously to codify the contributions in our pension ordinances. The substitute before you is there for a couple of reasons. One is, first of all, the original item, we didn't know the effective date of any of the laws at the time because of what was going on. The substitute now has actual effective dates in it. In addition, the original resolution was written with using what is known as the budgeted contribution and calculating the percentage of contribution based on that number. The actuary recommended that we use what's called the actual required contribution, and so we made that change. And then the last thing is that in the budget, biennial budget bill, not the budget repair bill, but the biennial budget bill, the legislature made a further change and exempted law enforcement and firefighting managerial employees from the pension contribution, but required, and it continued the exemption that had already existed for current public safety workers, represented public safety workers, however, begins or authorizes the contribution from public safety workers hired in the future. So essentially it exempts our current deputies, sheriffs, and firefighters, but applies the contribution to deputy sheriffs and firefighters hired in the future. So that change was made in the substitute. And so the substitute is the one now that follows the law. The prior resolution does not really follow the law, and so that's why the substitute is before you. And so I would urge you to recommend the substitute to the county board. The actuary performed his study. This matter was before you last time, and we were having some difficulty deciding how to do the calculation, basically. How do we come up with the percentage of contribution from employees? How do we define what is the one half of the actuarial required contribution, knowing that some employees are not going to contribute? And as a basic matter of fairness, if nothing else, why some employees who are contributing should pay more than their share to make up for the employees who are not contributing. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue, well, two other issues. One is the administrative expenses and how to handle the administrative expenses. And I'll let Mr. Langer speak in just a moment, but he originally had not included the administrative expenses in the calculation, but his current report does include them. And then the real big issue, frankly, is how to deal with the prior service liability, the unfunded liability, and how to allocate that between those who are contributing and those who are not, which is primarily the retirees and the deferred vested employees. As part of this, I guess Mr. Langer and Mr. Mansky looked to me to tell them how are we going to define this statutory language. And what I did is to say, well, the state system has similar statutory language. Let's look at the state's practice. Let's see how the state is handling this. And so Mr. Langer and Mr. Mansky investigated how the state does their calculation. It's not the same as ours because their system is different than ours, but it is at least similar in principles. And so they used the similar principles from the state system with respect to allocating the unfunded prior service liability and applied it to our system. And what you have then in the resolution is a commitment of the county board, Milwaukee County, to a percentage of contribution of 4.7% for 2011, the balance of 2011, and 2012. And then a provision that the county board in its annual budget will, with the advice of the actuary, will establish the percentage each year for the following year going forward. Mm-hmm. And with that, I would defer to Mr. Langer.
Thank you. Please continue. Oh, Supervisor May.
So in other words, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're saying each year that we have to establish the contribution on an ongoing basis of what the employees are going to put in to the pension plan. So this is a revolving fund. So if the pension go down, the contribution might will have effect. If it go up, will the contribution go down?
Chairman and Supervisor, that's correct. The contribution, Mr. Langer has in his report a projection of the contribution for the next several years, and it runs between 4.7 and 5.2%. But that projection is based on the assumption of 8% investment returns, exactly 8% every year for the next 5 years. And obviously that's not what's going to happen. It could be more, it could be less. Likewise, it's based on the liabilities as they exist in the system. And you have been, the county board has been changing the liabilities through, for example, the reduction of the pension multiplier from 2 to 1.6. As those liabilities decrease, that would obviously push the contribution down. Likewise, if returns, investment returns are up above 8%, that would reduce the contribution. But, of course, if we have a bad market, that, like 2008 and 2009, that will drive the contribution up. But it will be actuarially calculated and provided to you in time for your budget every year so that you can establish that percentage.
And if we have a different pension plan and we're not in the state pension plan, can you actually explain to me again how that the state can dictate a separate plan and what the employees are going to have, tell the county employees what they should contribute in their plan? We are not in the state plan, and I'm confused. Do the city of Milwaukee have to go through this whole process also? Because they also are not within the state plan.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the answer is that the state has the legal authority, to dictate to Milwaukee County on almost everything Milwaukee County does, including the pension system. The pension system was originally a creation of the state legislature. It was administered or monitored or amended by the state legislature for the first approximately 30 years of its existence before the state legislature said, we don't want to deal with this anymore. You deal with it, Milwaukee County. You take it over. You run it. And so in 1965, the legislature gave the authority to the county. But the legislature at any time could take that authority back. It could close the pension system. It would have to deal with, you know, vested benefit rights issues and things like that. But it has the authority to do that. It has a different authority with the city because the county is an administrative arm of the state. The city has a different legal standing. They have a city charter granted. They have a constitutional provision, which the county doesn't have. Nevertheless, the state legislature had originally applied the same language to the city in the recent legislation, but through the city's efforts, they made a change, I guess lobbying efforts, they made a change, and the city now does not have the same language as us. The legislature does mandate the city collect employee contributions, but they're deferring more to the city in terms of how they determine those contributions than they are with us. But the bottom line answer is that although we are a separate, you know, entity from the state still retains authority over us, over Milwaukee County on the pension system, like almost everything it does with the county. I mean, frankly, the state could abolish Milwaukee County tomorrow if it wanted to.
I doubt that.
I doubt they would. I'm not saying they would.
No, since you made that comment, I doubt that.
They could decide instead of having, you know, what is it, 72 counties, they could have 25 counties tomorrow. I mean, whatever.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, that would be nice because we got three counties in default, and they haven't took those over yet. So let's see how that happens. I think that can be a little problem there.
I'm just, Chairman and Supervisor, I'm just sort of stating it in the extreme to make a point, that's all.
You made your stream, and I came back with my stream. All right.
Thank you, Supervisor and Mr. Reed. Mr. Langer.
All right. We have a July 11th letter. Actuaries review a proposed ordinance amendment to the employees' retirement system for state mandated employee pension contributions. And Ms. Grady went through and described some of the highlights of this. Mm-hmm. The language itself is really simple, and it's summarized at the bottom half of the first page. And with the simplicity of the language, it leaves a lot open to interpretation. And we put the interpretations in the back of the report. It's an interesting deal that if something like this, if some sort of fundamental change like this was proposed in the corporate world under ERISA, you would probably see chapters and chapters of legislation making sure that everything was thumbscrewed to death. This is pretty simple. It just says half of the contribution. So it leaves a lot to be interpreted. The next piece of it is we went back and we wanted to make sure we were consistent with the state of Wisconsin in terms of this. And when we put out the first letter, we had discussions back and forth. And the state of Wisconsin, while the fundamentals are the same, in terms of they provide benefits to retirees and, contributions are put in, they have a very different contribution policy for in the state of Wisconsin. And it goes something along the lines of, within the county, we have one contribution rate. Within the state of Wisconsin, there's three, maybe four contribution rates for actives and public safety, and then there were one or two other groups I forgot about. I think it was legislators or something like that. But there's distinct contribution rates for those folks. So when they went in, and then furthermore, retirees, when you retire, those folks are scraped off to the side, and the impact of what happens on the retiree side of the house does not impact contribution rates for actives. So that's the fundamental thoughts that they have hanging out over there, which is different from Milwaukee County. So it was a little difficult to try and conform to what was happening with the state in terms of the fundamental deals of they've got two contribution rates, so they definitely separate out public safety from the rest of the folks, and they separate retirees out. And so that's part of what we did here in terms of implementing the provisions of this act. The other piece was when I read the legislation originally, you come through and it says, half of the actual required contribution for benefits. I read that as benefits. There's about $1.5 million that's paid towards expenses within your contribution requirement every year. The $26 million contribution for the retirement system this year, about $1.4 million of that is for administrative expenses. So I read benefits and I pulled that out. State of Wisconsin, they actually have they contribute for administrative expenses, so we put it back in. That's one of the differences with this letter, but a lot of it was just confirming that we're somewhat consistent with Wisconsin. One last piece, and I get to this in the comments later on, is that there's a lot of different ways to construct annual required contribution. You can go for extremely stable contributions. I work in states where the contribution is just dictated to be, it's going to be 20% of pay. And we'll ride it out. We'll see how things go. And if we have to adjust benefits, God bless, we'll look at that later on. Versus plans where things are relatively volatile. County of Milwaukee is somewhat in between. It's not quite as volatile as I've seen in other systems, but certainly more volatile than picking a level contribution. The Wisconsin retirement system, if you look at the variation in contributions that they have had for employers over the past 25, 30 years, it's remarkably small, the variation. I think the contribution rates, if I recall right, range from like about 10.3% of pay to about 12.9% of pay over the course of the past 25 years. A very narrow incremental. And they do that by making use of a lot of stabilization funds. They have a discipline in place where they say, hey, if things are going really good, we're not going to nosedive the contributions. And if things are going really bad, we're going to take the fruits that we've set aside during the good times and we're going to make use of them, all in an effort to keep those contribution rates very level. Those aren't quite in place within the county of Milwaukee, and you're going to see some contribution volatility that's more than what you see down the road in Madison with that statewide system. That's probably all the comments I want to make there, broad, right, I think. Getting into the actuarial analysis, there were a lot of actuarial interpretations we had to make. A lot of these I've discussed already on the bottom of page two. You know, sheriffs and firefighters, both non-represented and represented, they're not required to contribute. We've carved them aside. I refer to those folks as non-contributors and, you know, and the folks that have to contribute as contributors, just to keep it simple. Employee contribution rate, the second bullet point, we've made one employee contribution rate for all. And the provisions for folks can be different from, you know, from group to group. The provisions are absolutely different. The contribution rates can be different. We've made one rate for everyone. Now, the fact that we only have a rate for what's generally non-public safety folks means that, you know, the rate's sort of in the ballpark for everyone, right? The rate that we've developed, I wouldn't expect it to be vary from person to person all that much, but it will vary, and group to group. But we've developed one rate that's consistent with what they've done in Wisconsin, state retirement system. Now, the third bullet point, there's already folks making contributions. They're going to migrate to the new rate, you know, upon the at some point in the future. I've already baked those folks into the contributor group. So as they phase in, you know, as they phase out of their old contribution rate, they go into this new one. We don't have to recalculate this anytime before at the end of 2012. There won't be a new rate for any of these other folks. It'll be 4.7%.
Yep. If I may interrupt just for a minute on that point, as you know, you did impose what I'm calling county contributions on non-represented employees. You were intending to negotiate those with your unions. Those have recently gone from 2% to 3% for most employees. They were intended to go to 4 at the end of the year. Obviously, that disappears under the system, and we go to the state mandated contribution, which will vary from year to year. But the result of that is, in part, from a not an actuarial standpoint, but from a budget standpoint, you're actually seeing less savings because you're already anticipating savings from pension contributions. You were anticipating 2, 3, 4% pension contributions. So from a budget standpoint, this is not a dramatic increase in terms of the contribution that you're already expecting. And so from a budget standpoint, your savings are not dramatically more than what you were planning anyway as your own policy.
So I just wanted to make Mr. Grady, then that's focused not only on the employees who in fact have been contributing, but also the anticipation of successful negotiations to apply it across the board to everyone.
That my understanding of the budget was that it anticipated that coming across to everyone, and so what I'm talking about is the budget effect of this versus the budget that you had already adopted and anticipated, and so it, in that sense, it's not a dramatic change budgetarily for you.
Thank you. Any comments, questions at this point in the discussion? All right. Please continue.
All right. The last bullet point on the bottom of page two, and this is, I think, a leap of faith for some folks. Contributors will pay for half of their portion of the actuarial required contribution. This is the, you know, we've isolated retirees, we've set aside public safety folks, and those two non-contributor groups, and then we calculate a contribution for the contributors, or everyone but public safety, and that is to be consistent with what's happening under WRS. Top of page three is a statement that, you know, in the previous letter, we did not include administrative expenses because the term employee shall pay half of all actual required contributions for funding benefits under the retirement system. Looked to me that it should exclude expenses, but to be WRS does include administrative expenses, so we did bake those that amount back into the calculation. And the bottom point, the last bullet point on page three, is that, you know, we have an actual contribution and a budgeted contribution in any given year. The budgeted contribution you use for budgets, it gives you a sneak peek at what we think the contribution is going to be during any given year. And then the following year, we go through with evaluation and develop an actual contribution rate that's based on everything we know up to that point. It was our recommendation to use the actual contribution as opposed to the budget because it's, for lack of a better word, more precise numbers based upon everything we know to date. And so this letter is based upon that. So the determination of the employee contribution rate is on page 4, and it's based upon the interpretations I've listed out above. Any questions to this point?
I don't see any, right. Please.
All right, so page 4 is a lot of stacks of numbers, which is always fantastic. Three columns here. The first column, non-contributors. These are the folks that aren't contributing. The public safety folks and retirees, we push them aside. Contributors, the folks that will have member contributions. And then we have a total of just a tick and tie to what we showed in the evaluation report. Let's get down to down near the bottom, the projected employee contribution for 2012, and you get a sense of some of the numbers. The normal cost, that's the cost of benefits accruing, that's under item 1A, that's about $19.4 million. That's your ongoing cost of the plan if you're fully funded. The split between contributors and non-contributors, contributors make up a lot of the group. $16.1 million worth of the $19.4 is for the contributors. So we allocate that $16.1 towards the contributor member contribution calculation. In terms of the unamortized piece of it, we amortize this across the group based upon the amount of liabilities that they have. So because retiree liabilities is a large chunk of the group, it's 1.4 billion of your 2.1 billion in liability. So we allocate a bit more of the annual amortization payments to the non-contributors, primarily because of the retiree liability. That leaves 1.9 million out of the 7.3 million allocated to contributors. That gets you a final contribution for the contributors of 18 million. Half of that is the amount of member contribution, or $9 million. We divide by the expected salaries, item 3 in 2011, for the contributor group of about $193 million. That leaves with a contribution rate of 4.7%. And just for references, and these will not be the numbers, because as we've talked, things change from year to year. This is based upon 8% return happening, and all the other the provisions of the plan being the same, and all other assumptions happening. And you can see the variability that happens in the contribution rate over the next 4 years if everything goes as planned, from the 4.7% to 5.4%. And I would anticipate variation of that type going on in the future under the current funding policies of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Meehan.
Thank you. Now, for the non-contributors, you are taking off their liability, and also for the public safety. The people who are contributing to the pension plan are not picking up their load. Am I correct?
Right. I've allocated assets based upon how much liability you're holding. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we've segregated out the retirees, and we've segregated out the public safety to, yes. Quick answer is yes. How'd I do?
Yes, you did. Fine. All right. Other question, why did you use administration costs, even though our plan is not similar to the state, to put into our contribution versus leaving the administration costs for the plan? Because the plan was dealing with that at first, and we did not deal with that administration cost.
To attempt to be consistent with what everything else that was going on. And is cherry picking a term?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I attempted not to. I wanted to make sure I wasn't cherry picking. I wanted a consistent thought process when we went through this. And when we first went through this and we said, we don't want to take $26 million, cut it in half, and ship it off to the contributors. Mark uses the word fair. I tend to agree with that word. I wish there was another one, because fair is a little wishy-washy, but equitable, something like that. And that was the original letter, was based upon that, and scraping aside the administrative costs. Sometimes it's nice to look somewhere else and say, hey, did you guys consistently apply it in this fashion as well? And we looked down the road at WRS, and they confirmed, looking at WRS, it confirmed our methodology for dividing between contributors and non-contributors. But the one piece that was inconsistent and that didn't allow us to say, hey, we did this like WRS, was that administrative cost. And so that's why it got baked back in. In terms of impact, if I'm remembering, real rough, I think it was 0.2%. So I think without the admin, it was 4.5% versus 4.7%, mm-hmm. which is real money. Don't get me wrong.
It is real money.
Yeah. But it that was the rationale for just to be consistent and remove any of these. Yeah, we did it like WRS, but I wanted to eliminate the yeah buts.
Okay, but let's put the buts in there. Because of, can we structure our system, even though we have our contribution, to have all these different levels of who can contribute, what amounts can contribute, put safety in one basket, elected because they have elected in one basket, I don't know how they can do the unions.
And I was reading here, we've got four groups. I'm sorry, friend. There's four groups.
Can the county now create their own four groups? If you want to be consistent, because you said, yeah, but we look at WRS system. I'm just curious.
Do
you want a letter? You want to do?
I was going to give a whirl at it. Will you mop up? Thank you. So the in terms of having a consistent like policy for determining contributions across the group, certainly it's something that could be explored, I think.
Okay.
In fact, I think somewhere in there, I think that we talk about the last bullet point on the bottom of five, the low of 10.3% to a high of 12.9% over the past 25 years, that is in due to the methodologies they make use of for establishing the contribution rate. They've got all sorts of stabilization funds and things of that nature. So you could certainly develop the funding policy in a similar methodology to WRS for purposes of trying to attain more contribution stability or splitting among groups or any of that stuff. Absolutely.
My last question is, Jay. Don't we have a stabilization fund? That's for the Savannah. Okay. That's not added to our contribution, am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, the stabilization fund is a separate budget item from your pension contribution.
Thank you. All right.
Mr. Grady, you wanted to add some comments?
I wanted to follow up the question, Supervisor Mayo's question, about setting different contribution rates for different employee groups. Frankly, no one had asked me that before. It's a good question. I think the answer to that question, probably from a legal standpoint, is that the county board could establish different contribution rates for different groups. The hard part would be drawing those lines. I mean, where do you draw them? Who do you include in one group? Who do you include in another group? Do you divide them between job classifications? Do you divide them between higher dates, pre-82s, post-94s, whatever? I mean, do you divide them between pay ranges, high pay ranges, low pay ranges? How do you do it? And so the state does have several contribution rates, but they're very broad. It's, I think, elected officials, general employees, public safety workers, and retirees, I think. And don't quote me on that, but I think that's what it is. So the answer to your question is yes, you probably could develop it. It might be difficult to do just administratively, but you legally, I think you could.
Just to chime in one last piece, I mean, the ones that we typically, Mark put out a laundry list of different groups, the ones that if I typically see a split, it tends to be public safety, general, and then we total them. Because the costs between public safety and general are so different. Public safety tends to be more expensive because public safety can retire earlier, there's disability benefits, you need a higher level of cash for those folks to pay for the benefits to make sure that their retirement is secure. Sometimes you get into additional, I said something shocking.
Explore the question.
Since you made that statement, wouldn't the safety be in there because they retire early, to have opportunity to retire early, to contribute, to put more revenue and keep bringing the budget down a little bit more, to help offset when they retire, because they get the age of 55 or something like that, or 55, then they can go, versus saying, oh, leave them. It's political, but leave them out. You're throwing up a lot more questions and flags and saying, okay, why are we doing this?
Mr. Chairman, the problem here with that is that the state legislature has specifically exempted current public safety workers. Mm-hmm. Now, future hires in those areas will be contributing at this same percentage rate. But current ones, even if you establish a different rate for public safety workers, it would only apply to the new hires. It wouldn't apply to the current ones.
Oh, no, I think they're doing an excellent job. They do a wonderful job for us to protect us. I'm just showing my picture now. We're not talking about anything else, what they do for them. We're just saying how to make this a fair and equitable across the board. That's what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts, comments by the two presenters? On item number one.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Mayo moves approval of the item number one. We have a second.
Mr. Chairman, for interrupting. You do have a substitute in front of you, and I want to make it clear, or want your action to be clear on what it is you're moving approval.
Okay, we would concur with finance. I move approval to concur with finance and the pension.
Personnel.
And one other question, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
What is the state elected, since they made all these different rules, what is their contribution?
I don't know the number. I'm sorry. Do you know? Do you recall?
There wasn't a lot of variation among those amounts in terms of member contributions. I didn't see anything shocking. I mean, they were all around the six, you know, five and a half, six, maybe six and a half. I don't remember any stunning, you know, this is 12%, this is 15%.
No. Just can you just bring it off for me and just send me an email or something like that? I'm just curious of the different classes. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Appreciate it. We have a motion before us. It's been made and seconded. Any questions or discussions on the motion? Hearing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayo.
Aye.
Thomas.
Aye.
Cohen. Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Four ayes, zero noes. The motion to concur with finance and audit and personnel is approved.